My name's Faith, and I am in ACA. I have been for the last couple of years. I brought my phone because I sit till one. The format I like to use when I do sharings is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So what it was like is, you know, there's history behind me. I come from intergenerational trauma. It goes way, way back. My biological father was a prisoner of war in Bataan. He was probably 28 when he, I don't know how old he was when I met my mother, but he had just gotten out of out of being in the internment camp. And he met my mom. He had me when he was 29. My mother had me when she was 17. So there's a great age disparity there. He was a bigamist too. And today he'd have to register as a sex offender, but that's back in the day then. During this time of my birth, I was an army brat. My grandmother was an alcoholic. My father's an alcoholic. My mother's an alcoholic. My bio dad's an alcoholic. Everybody's an alcoholic. And my mother had to give me up. I don't know exactly the real story, but I think it's because I was exposed to a lot of violence. My grandmother was put in an institution, Agnew State Hospital. Then she was in Camarillo State Hospital. I grew up visiting her when I was in junior high. This thing bothered me. I can't see you. That's better. Yeah, thank you. You can see me too.
Can you turn the mic up a little bit? We'll pick up your
voice better. I don't know how to do that. Oh, like that. Okay. So anyway, when I was about a year and a half, I was put away for safekeeping. That's what I think. In foster homes in Lompoc. I was born in Camp Cook in Lompoc or Santa Maria, wherever Camp Cook was at. My grandpa was a captain in the army. Anyway, I was put in foster care from the age of 1.5 to about 4 or so. So those are my formative years. I don't have any sense that it was bad. I think that they were all good people. I was in like 3 different ones, and the last one was here in Santa Barbara. So my sense is that they were really good people. And I was probably very lucky and very blessed to have this safe haven to be in until I was able to go back to my mom. I didn't know who she was because she told me that. She goes, you said, you're not my mother. And I said, well, I guess you are. You know, I just met you. I don't know who you were, but she's really pretty. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman, like Audrey Hepburn kind of beauty, gorgeous. Or Lana Turner. No, that's who she looked like. She had that soft hair. And when I moved in with her, and she was dating my stepdad, my bio dad, since he was bigamist, she threw him out. And I said, bye. He was messed up. I mean, he had to have had PTSD. And he was a womanizer, and obviously. Anyway, when she retrieved me, it wasn't good. She wasn't very nice. But then sometimes she was really nice. She was Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I mean, I just never knew what to expect with this woman. My stepdad, when they got married when I was 5, Mr. Garcia. I didn't know what to call him. Mr. Garcia, Gregory, Dad. I didn't know what to say, you know. But finally, I started calling him Daddy. And I loved him. He was a great man. He's dead now. He looks like a Mexican Einstein. And that's my culture, is Latina, but my blood is German and Native, and my identity is Native. Anishinaabe. That's kind of fun. So I like my dad, my stepdad. I just call my dad. He was cool. He was good. He was my protector. He was kind of like a shield, you know, between my mom and me. And I remember I used to think, I'd buy taffy candy for my mom because I thought that was her favorite. And then recently I had this memory, because I don't have very many memories. I don't remember anything. I mean, I'm like so shut down. I have PTSD big time. I mean, if somebody jumps behind me, I'm going to jump like that. To this day, I have that strong startle reflex. But one time she left me alone. I think I was about 5. I was little, because I knew I was that around that age because of where we lived. I could tell how old I was by where we were living. And she left me alone, and it was dark in there, and I found this bag of taffy candy. And I just ate one piece. God, it tasted good. So I ate another one and another one and another one. And I was sitting on the bed, and I put all the papers on the side of the bed. And then she came back, and then eventually she discovered that I ate all the candy, and I got in big trouble. So that was my first drug of choice, sugar. I'm a sugar addict. It started then when I was 5. And then when I started learning how to read, my second drug of choice was reading. I'd go to the library when I was like, I don't know, 9, 10. Because in Santa Barbara in those days, you could do that. And you could walk around by yourself as a little kid. And I'd check out these stacks of fairy tale books. And in those days in Santa Barbara, there was a children's library. And it was just nothing but children's books. I read every single fairy tale book that they had. And then I graduated to romance when I was like, you know, 11, 12. And I remember that my mom would call me to set the table, and I wouldn't hear her. She'd call me, Faith Ann, Faith Ann. And then finally she'd, you know, scream it, and I'd jump. But I was so buried into, you know, the second escape. And what I've learned as an adult is that I'm an escape artist because I don't like pain. When I experience emotional pain, it's like throwing water in a hot skillet. You know how it beads up, goes away? Mm-hmm. That's how I feel with pain. I don't want to feel it. You know, I'll work with it, because that's what I do for a living, is help people with their pain. That's easy for me. But my own pain, not so good. It's not easy. So, things got harder and harder as I started getting older and older. I started to become, you know, adolescent. And I feel like my mom was jealous of me. And when she married, my maiden name is Rogan, but that's not my bio father's real name. His real name is Martinez. He didn't know who his father was. So he got adopted by these people when his mother died, my grandmother died. So I was born Faith Ann Brogan. And then when my mother married my dad, she was Judy Garcia, Greg Garcia, and then my brother Greg was born, and then Bruce was born, and then Nora, and they're all Garcias. And then when my little sister was born, I was 13, she left to Wisconsin to go see her family, the Schneider people, the German people. And I said, all right, the Wicked Witch is gone. I didn't get to clean and cook and take care of my little baby sister and enjoy my father and clean the house, because she wouldn't clean house very, very, very much. And I was like a little Susie Homemaker. I still am. And I like it. I mean, I love to play house. I love to play school. I love to make stuff. And I still do that. When I clean my house, it's fun. It's clean. It's playing house with my big stuff, you know? And, you know, I used to play dolls, and now I have all my people that I work with, and they're like, you know, my little dollies grew up, you know. You know, so everything I did as a child, I still do as a grown-up, but in big people terms. So when she left, my dad sat here, I got to sit next to him, I hold my little baby sister, and then Greg, and then Bruce. And then when she came back, she made me go sit on the other couch. So here's all the Garcias on this couch, and here's Faith Rogan on this couch right here. And I was 12 or 13. And by then I had started drinking and smoking. Because I was a really nice little girl in grade school, but when I hit junior high, all bets were off. I don't know why, but I decided I needed to be tough. I got really hardcore tough. Like, you ain't gonna mess with me, man. I mean, it was awful. Anyway, seeing it all by myself, I just felt such not a part of. So I made my first and only suicide attempt. And I took a bunch of Excedrins. 10 of them, you know. But I didn't know, you know, I didn't know if they were going to kill me or not. And I went and sat on the couch all by myself, Faith Ann Rogan, and looking at them, the people. And shit, what did I do? And I sat there and I said, oh my God, I might die. I want to die. But I couldn't say anything to them. You don't talk to those kind of people about these kind of things. So I just sat there just not knowing if I was going to live or die. It was pretty gnarly. It taught me a lesson. Never make a suicide note. And I haven't since then. So anyway, that's when, you know, that was my third escape, was alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, drama, trauma, becoming a rebel, acting out, you aren't gonna mess with me. I mean, I'm like a really smart girl, and, you know, my grades went down to F's, and I was hanging around with the lowlifes, and speaking of the lowlifes, one day my dad caught me with the lowlifes, and I didn't think they were lowlifes, they're my people, my friends. And he said, you can't hang around with him. And I said, well, I'm going to tell you the truth, because you told me to tell you the truth, and I'm still going to hang around with him, so why should I lie to you? And he goes, what did you say? I said, I'm going to hang out with him. He's my boyfriend. And, oh yeah, that was my other addiction. Before SE, there was first sugar, then fantasy, then boys, then alcohol, because I used to like David Alba in third grade, and then fourth grade too. So my father said, get in the truck. And I'm, you know, being a smart ass teenager, I said, I wish I knew my real father. And he said, what? Because he's this like old school Mexican man, like scary man. Not to me, but to everybody in the world. And when he was mad, he was scary to me. And he goes, what'd you say? I said, I wish I knew my real father. And he stopped talking to me. He didn't talk to me for like 2, 3, 4 years. He cut me off. So all the pain in my family, despite my mom being Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that is the most painful. And I know how to do that. If you hurt me, I don't know, I don't care. I shut you out. You know, I become ice queen. My ex-husband used to call me ice queen. And it's 7:30. Am I over?
No. We started the meeting at 7. You're perfect.
Oh, just give me when it's time to start, because I'm going to get to this, to all the other stuff. Okay. I'm just setting the stage right here. So anyway, he cut me off. He didn't talk to me. So that was like the worst of all the abuse, as far as I'm concerned. So I finally left the house when I was 19. I got married. And so my name became Faith Ann de Oliveira. And then I have so many different recoveries. What happened finally, so I'm going to jump to what happened. I'm going to get into ACA, you know, recovery stuff, because that's the most important, really. Because we all relate to our stories in some way, shape, or form, I think. That drinking, I just kept on drinking until finally I hit bottom. So I was, I got married. I was Faith Ann de Oliveira. Then I left him for my second husband. So I was Faith Ann Mayo. Then I left him because he was a womanizer, like my bio father. The first guy was good. He was really good. I messed that one up. I was bad. So the second husband was a womanizer, so I left him. I had two little girls, came back to Santa Barbara, and I was going to UCSB. When it was time to graduate, I didn't want his last name because he wasn't part of me. So I dropped his name. I became Faith Ann. Then I met my third husband after fooling around a whole lot, and then so that's like my love addiction stuff was kicking in. Then met my third husband. His last name's Cavalier, so I was very serious. So I thought, I'll take his name so then I can be Cavalier, because I'm not Cavalier. So I took his name as an affirmation. And then we were married for like 20 years, and I got sober. I got sober after 21 years of drinking, and I've been sober for 30 years. And he got sober, and he's been sober for 30 years. We were married for 20 years. So just because we were sober doesn't mean we were well in that marriage. So I finally left because it wasn't a healthy thing. And now I'm Faith Ann, well actually I'm not Ann anymore, I'm Faith Grace Magdalena. I took Grace as my middle name because I've had a lot of grace in my life, and Magdalena because I'm independent, and, you know, it's a girl name. So that's what happened. I got sober. And from sobriety, I started branching out to other 12-step things, like I went to CODA, and then I went to Al-Anon, and then I went to Smoke Enders Anonymous, And then I went to, see what else, DA. Then I found SLAA. Then I found UA, under Earners Anonymous. And then I came to ACA. I was visiting a friend in Santa Fe, and she's into GA, and she's into ACA. So she took me to meeting. And that's where this book came from. I bought this book there. It's heavy. You know, I should have bought it here. These suitcases are heavy. Oh, wow. So it says here that October 2013. So I had this book since then. And I brought it with me tonight because I have a lot of different writings in it. You know, the whole point of ACA for me was, where did I see this? I wrote it down someplace. Oh, purpose of attending ACA. This is what I wrote down for myself. To heal my maladaptive ways of relating to others due to my alcoholic upbringing. I'm very reactive. I can cop an attitude in a heartbeat. I can be all tough and have a chip on my shoulder. I can talk all kinds of shit and scare the shit out of you if I don't smile. You know, I start cussing. You know, I can sabotage myself. I had this job as a mediator at the courthouse, and the secretary got me mad, and I said, "What's your effing problem?" And you don't talk like that when you're a professional, right? But I'm ACA, okay? So I can't help it, you know, but I don't want to be like that. So I'm here to change those maladaptive ways, because that's not me. I just learned how to be like that to survive. You know, there was so much trauma in my background. And even in my marriages, there's so much trauma. So I have, when I do my ACA, I don't just do it for my family of origin. I do it for my second family with all my kids, you know, because that's crazy too. So I apply these things. To heal the reactivity button that is still operating when I'm around my mother. That's starting to heal. I've been noticing something lately. I have a core issue, or had a core issue. It's healing now. The core issue was feeling left out. I made a suicide attempt because I felt left out and not feeling loved. It's hard for me to internalize love. Like if I'm in a love relationship and that person leaves, like to go to work, I can't feel the love. I can't internalize it. The only love I can internalize is my cats and my children and my mom and my sister and my family. I can do that, luckily, but outside of that, it's pretty hard. And a few close friends, and I've been around for a long time, so I have friends like for 30 years already, you know. But I can feel that healing because I spoke to my mom. I called her up, and we had this really nice conversation, and I really enjoyed the conversation. I don't hate her. I can say I love her. There was a time where I would say, I hate her, and my friends would say, "You don't hate her." I go, "Yes, I do. Don't tell me what my feelings are. I hate that bitch." But I don't hate her because I understand she's a product of her environment too. I mean, I knew this years and years ago, but I mean, I know it. I know it down here now. And the other purpose of attending ACA is to make living amends to my kids because I perpetuated the harsh and rigid treatment onto them. And I was a mean mom too. And a nice mom, and a mean mom, and a nice mom. And still to this day, you know, I can trip out. Not as bad as I used to. Let's see. 4, I don't want to create any more wreckage. And 5, I tend to spiral downward when I am ignored, left out, criticized, or I make a mistake. Emotionally, I just go, and I want to die. Well, I don't want to commit suicide, but I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here because I don't want to feel anything. You know, and that's what addiction's all about, is escaping reality. You know, perceived reality, because I see through all these filters. So I'm really doing my best now to stay with what is and know that I have a lot of filters, and, you know, I'm working on clearing those up, and that's how come, you know, I come to ACA. But recently, this issue of being left out, I know that it's leaving because I was married, you know, for a very long time, and I have all these, you know, I have 2 boys from the last husband, and then he came into my girl's life when they were like 6 and 10 years old, so, you know, he raised my daughter. So anyway, we don't think in terms of half-sister, brother, blah, 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 it was family. So I got 4 kids, and this last husband, who's like family. I was longer with him longer than with my own original family. So I'm gonna just say this, and I think it's time. Is it about time to wrap up? I just don't know. I've lost track.
We've got another 5-10 minutes.
Okay, I got some more time. All right. So, recently, it was. Let's see what happened. Something happened where my daughter went to my ex's house with her brother and her two brothers and her little kid, and I had a fit about it. I had a meltdown with my son and his girlfriend. I said, "What? You guys were all over there and had dinner and I wasn't invited?" And I just had this meltdown. So I said, "I better call a therapist because, you know, that's not good." So I went and talked to the lady about it, and then did some more work. And then November is a big family month. It's my ex's birthday, it's my son's birthday, it's my granddaughter's birthday, oh my God, Thanksgiving, all kinds of shit. So on my kid's dad's birthday, I send him a text in the morning. I say, "Happy birthday." Because we're family, I mean, we still all hang out together. Send him a text and got him a present. And then it turns out everybody was over his house for dinner. And I go, "What about me? Nobody told me anything. My daughter's supposed to come to my house. She canceled." And then I said, "Well, F them. I'm going to yoga," because I do a lot of self-care. So I did. And then after I got out of my yoga, there's a text from him, "If you want to come and eat, come and eat." And I said, "Oh, that's pretty nice. That's inclusive." But I'm all hot and sweaty. Hot yoga? No, I don't think so. Too late. Why didn't you tell me? I hear my dad's voice. Why didn't you tell me like an hour ago when you knew, or 3 hours ago? Anyway. So then it was my son's birthday a few days later, and we all went down to a concert all together. And I said, "Wow, I'm included in that." And then after that was Thanksgiving. I wasn't going to do Thanksgiving from make anything because my daughter's going out of town. And I'm tired of the cleanup. I don't mind cooking. I don't like cleaning up. So I told their dad, I said, "What are you doing for Thanksgiving?" He goes, "I don't know." He goes, "If Patrick's around, I'll do turkey." I said, "Okay." Then he sends me a text. "Well, Pat's not going to be around. I'm not doing anything." I said, "Okay, fine. I don't care. I'll go along." Because it really doesn't matter to me. And then I get a text, "Patrick is coming. So if you want to eat, come over at 3. And I go, "Wow, I'm included again." So it was me, my two boys, their dad, and my other son's two friends, and the dog. And we all ate as a family. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then I called my mom and talked with her, and I just don't feel like, I can feel it now. I can feel connected. And the other thing that's really big that's happening is I'm really sick and tired of being critical and making up stories and judging and talking shit about. I mean, I'm just so tired of that. So, some people in my life that are really close to me aren't that nice sometimes, but I'm thinking, oh well, that's their problem. I mean, I don't have to make it my problem. If they want to put me down or discount me or make fun of me, so what? I know who I am. I've been doing so much self-care with eating right, yoga, resting, connecting with just good people, coming to my meetings, resting, eating Ben and Jerry's now and then, you know, as my self-care thing, but not too much. It's that I feel filled up, you know, I feel full of myself, full of love. And now that I'm feeling that, I'm like more interested in spending time with these other people in a very true, authentic, loving way. And I feel like, I don't know, just being softer and more compassionate with their mistakes, probably because I've been becoming more compassionate with my own mistakes. So, so that's what it's like today. It's really good today. It's really, really good today. So I was going to read something. Do I have time to read something, or is it time to wrap up? What do I have?
You got 5 minutes.
I have 5 minutes, all right. This is fun. You should try it. But when they ask you, say yes. Okay, so we're probably going to read this again at the end of the meeting, but it's okay because it'll be reinforced. So these are the promises. Okay, these are promises when you love yourself. This is part of chapter 15, self-love, beyond survival, practicing self-love. I read it tonight before I came here to see if I was on track, and yes, I am. So we will discover our real identities by loving and accepting ourselves. Who I am, because I think, okay, who am I? Well, when I was in grade school, that's like my marker before I turned like this radical kid. I'm still radical, but in a nice way. Sometimes. But sometimes, you know, you learn all these things, so you gotta be stable for when you need them. Don't throw anything out. But I want to be in control of it. Let it be in control of me. So anyway, I was sweet, I was friendly, and I'm open. And I am friendly, and I am open, and I am sweet if I like you. If I'm not, you know, I probably won't talk to you. Because I'm selective. See, I'm very selective. But not that selective, really. It's just a sociopath, I don't want it on me, and a narcissist. Two, our self-esteem will increase as we give ourselves approval on a daily basis. I'm proud of my self-care. Today, I had this really big test with this person that I was in love with off and on for over 40 years. And I put my self-care, my health and safety and well-being before his pleasure. And my friend told me that. And I said, you know, you're right. And my self-esteem doesn't. Fear of authority figures and the need to people please will leave us. I know how to say no. You know, it's not to say I'm not afraid sometimes of these authority figures, but not that much, really. Our ability to share intimacy will grow inside us. You know, I'm selective, and I'm getting there. I'm open when I know that, or I sense that I'm safe. As we face our abandonment issues, we'll be attracted by strengths and become more tolerant of weaknesses. So I'm not like a Christian. I don't know really what I am. I was raised a Catholic, but I'm more Native. But, you know, I'm eclectic. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot about Christ. You know, his birthday is coming up. So is the Virgin Mary, who's my lady. Because she's my symbol of mother besides the earth. But, you know, there's a saying that Jesus has, like, forgive them, they know not what they do. And that's what I think about my people and myself when I mess up or we mess up or they mess up is because we don't know any better. And that's what the Buddha says, you know, that ignorance is the cause of all suffering. So I try and do my best to fall back on that, and then that helps me with my compassion. And we will enjoy feeling stable, peaceful, and financially secure. And I just drew a little happy face because I have that. We will learn how to play and have fun in our lives. And I go, yep, I have a motorcycle. And we were talking about having a dance. And so let's dress up. I was going to dress up tonight. I bought the dress, bought the shoes. It was so cold. And I thought, you know, another time. We will choose to love people who can love and be responsible for themselves. Yep. Healthy boundaries and limits will become easier for us to set. I can say no again, and I can just do it simply and honestly. Do you want to go have dinner? No, I'm tired. I need to stay home, but you can come over if you want. Fear of failure and success will leave us, and we will intuitively make healthier choices, and I feel like I'm doing that because I keep coming back here. You know, I love 12 step. I mean, I love it with all my heart and soul, so I'm very grateful to that. With help from our ACA support group, we will slowly release our dysfunctional behaviors. Yes, I'm doing that. I don't hardly want to cuss anymore. I mean, I know I did some tonight because it's habit, but I really, really don't. I want to do it less often. Keep it really minimum, just for effect. You know? Gradually, with our higher powers' help, we will learn to expect the best and get it. Yes, I expect the best and I get it. And if it's not going to give it to me, if others can't give it to me, that's okay. I can give it to myself today. So I'm a very grateful, happy person. And thank you for asking me to come up here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I have some really good friends here that I trust. And actually, I trust all of you, even if I don't know you that well. Thank you.